Welcome back to the podcast with no name. We'll be discussing that today, amongst other things. I'm sure we'll deviate in many fashions, so stay tuned.
Yeah, we're going to try to cover some comments from the first episode, all sorts of dry fly tactics, kind of fishing with rules, why people fish pictures, handling fish, all sorts of hot button issues. So
perfect.
Let's jump in. All right. Episode three. My name is Braden Anderson. I am sitting here with Kelly Gallup. We've shot two of these so far.
How many?
Two. And we're on to the third. So I think we're going to do, we're kind of changing things up and working with it as we go. Obviously, it's a new thing. So
new deal.
If you guys have recommendations for things you want to see, segments we're going to do, questions, we love questions. Give us something to talk about.
That would be really fun to have a Q&A live like we used to do with the, well, not live, but same thing, but yeah. It's kind of just what we're doing. That was really fun. We used to do that for years, and it really was stimulating to me because you can only listen to yourself. Believe it or not, I even get tired of listening to me. Don't take my glasses off and fast forward.
I think he's the only one. That's a great point. Leave questions, comments, anything else in the comments.
I don't usually read those things too much. I get 500 really nice people and two dipshits, and it pisses me off. But I did on the first one. I read a lot of them, and it was great because the guys that I think were trying to be total assholes, I found to be the best. I loved it. They're the best questions.
Oh, we're going to get to them today.
Oh, we are?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, great.
Leave your comments, reviews, stuff you want to hear us talk about, questions, all
the
that
names.
Stuff.
That was fun.
That names was, are good. We're getting into those today, too.
Oh, yeah. Mel and I sat reading those things, and it was hilarious.
All right, so let's jump in. Let's start off by picking a new name for our podcast. There were a number of comments that just said, slide in podcast is great. Keep that going. I think we can do better. I mean, it's a good fallback. But
there were some fun ones.
There were some fun
there
ones.
There was a...
So starting off, just the tips...
That was one of them.
Yeah, I liked that one. Loose lips on sink tips and jerk strips.
Little wordy.
Creative. Creative. Was Sam Wittenkind.
Yeah.
Chef McGregor was the just the tips one. Those are nice. I don't think we're going to go that direction. Let's see. One guy said Big Brown Club, and I'm not sure if...
Well, we won't be exclusively talking about trout or streamer stuff. For those of you who don't know, I probably fish more dry flies than I fish streamers, which is hard to believe, but here in particular, I'm relegated to evening fishing mostly because I'm in the shop or doing something, but I don't miss my last hour of daylight ever if I can help it, so we won't be just, we need to do more of that.
Remember that night where... I was heading back down to Edison. I left a GoPro with you, and you said, I'm going to go fish tonight.
Oh, yeah.
Let me wear that thing.
Yeah, piece of shit.
You texted me at 10 p.m. going, it was the greatest night ever. You sent me all these phone videos of big brown trout. I was like, so did you wear the GoPro? I couldn't find it.
Yeah, no, I couldn't figure out how to put it on.
Oh,
that piece of shit. It's worse than a fucking sling pack.
It is a little bit. It's a little bit like wearing a bra.
Yeah, exactly. I don't mind it when you're putting the bra on me, but... That's a whole nother story.
We'll clip that and put that in the screen. So the Big Brown Club, the kind of thing about it is, you know, the second comment was, I joined the BBC Club this year. And if you don't know what that is, get a connection to the internet and you'll figure it out. We're not going to go into it. We got Jacob Jeffcott, Streamer Junkies, Fred Brown had a couple of good ones. Turning water into tight lines. The gospel according to Gallup. The savior of streamers. And he had some nice things to say, which I won't pad your ego with. Don't worry. The one I really liked, Connor Albison. Him and a bunch of others had kind of similar names. Hunt the Fly, Hunt Don't Hope.
I liked those too.
Yeah. That one kind of resonates with me. And then I also like just The Dungeon.
So. Mel liked that Dungeon one too. That was a good one. Fly Dungeon or something like that. But I don't really think it means too much one way or the other. But
no. And given our...
I kind of liked it.
Go ahead.
I kind of like, I think we did that once with something else where we let somebody pick it and then we gave a prize out. When would we do it? And Kila Corona started that way. We did that tying contest. I don't remember how it, what did we name something?
It might have predated my time here.
Way predated your time, like before COVID, I think. And so.
What we want to avoid is, you heard about how the British, they were renaming some like research vessel and they opened it up to an internet forum and it ended up being named Bodie McBoatface.
we'll
choose the options, but if you like any of those ones you heard, leave it down in the comments, let us know. Maybe we'll do an Instagram poll.
Yeah, maybe we should do a contest. The loser has to spend a day with Johnny. What a drag.
Okay, we'll pick from one of those names eventually. We might just...
I like that Hunt one. I remember reading through them. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, I like Hunt the Fly. Hunt the Fly is a good one.
Yeah, it was a...
Maybe we'll go with that. Maybe we won't. And then, a bunch of people left a lot of really nice comments. People seem to enjoy the first one that we did. Second one will have been out already, and now we're talking about the third. Wanted to just kind of go through some of these comments and get your thoughts on them. Mike said, often mesmerized by Kelly's discussions. His thought process can be random and convoluted, but it's full of information that once you digest, it becomes amazingly clear.
And then, you should be in my mind. You think it's convoluted for you.
You guys don't understand how hard my job is making these shows. This one's from a nice guy. 80 minutes of ranting about fish that no one listening will ever catch. Captivating stuff. Stick to tying videos.
And, I remember him.
You know,
he probably bitches that I talk too much doing those too.
I'm just glad he hung around for all 80
minutes. Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Thanks for the ad revenue, buddy. And then this one's from a...
But you never know if you're never going to catch it.
You never know. Well, we got a lot of messages, a lot of emails, a lot of DMs after we put that out. A lot of our followers have gotten big fish. A lot are stuck around 28, 29. That's a giant.
Hell yes, it is.
It's a huge fish. So they're out there. I mean, you got to keep plugging away.
I think part of this whole thing, that hunt for the 30, I mean, you can take it in any way you want. You can do this where it puts a wall up that you say it's like whatever that guy's name was that says nobody's ever going to catch. Well, if you don't try, you can't. And if you don't hunt a white whale, you're never going to get it. It's. But the big thing, I was listening. I went down this all the Andy Mill and Andy and Nikki when they did that podcast, and they kept talking about it and how hard it is to do. And then I watched another one of Andy's because I'm a big Tom McGuane fan, and I watched his and they were kind of both getting to this point in their lives where the hunt for the whale was over and other things were happening, but they were talking about their lives, which are giant lives. They both had just enormous, massive careers and nothing, with not to do with fishing. Well, Andy's was it later, but the thing that I kept hearing about, they were talking tarpon, obviously, because both of them are serious tarpon fanatics. Andy, I mean, I don't know how many world champions that guy won. But the thing that I took from that, listening to that and thinking about ours, was that they never lost. These guys, well, not I think Tom's 83 or something, 2-1, I don't know, and Andy's I think 70 something, early 70s maybe, not much older than me, but they didn't lose the hope and they didn't lose. And then I also listened to one that was even more, even hit me a little deeper, was Flip Pallets with Andy and Nikki. And it was the just the hunt. I think our expectations are so freaking high now because of the goddamn internet and everybody's jacking one of these things out, arm extensions, you know, and a 25's looking like a 33. And I think we've got so freaking jaded that we just don't get the fact that it's the hunt. And you like, whatever the guy, what was the guy's name that said it was 80 minutes of shit or whatever he said, but you might be right. You may never. And you may never tie a perfect Lady Caroline either. But if you don't just keep hunting it and trying, and our expectations seem to be you have to solidify the 30. Right. And you probably won't. I mean, you know, there's lots of days I go out and think, maybe there's not one left for me. Maybe it's not, so much stuff has to go right for you to do that. But I would never stop because it may not happen.
Right.
I mean, if you hunt, I was particularly mesmerized by, I've always been mesmerized by Flip Pallet, but he's so, such a great thinking, especially about the outdoor stuff is just, but you know, he's talking about, he had a comment that he'd pulled more distance than he'd walked. And he said, in the shit, the fishing in the Keys and all that has gone to total shit. I mean, it's just dying. I mean, there's still lots of fish, but not like when they were there. But you could see when he talks about pulling his skiff around that he had the same fire as he ever did. So if the outcome is a 30 and you don't get your 30 in 20 years, you know, what, so what? Do you quit? Go take up fucking macrame. I don't give a shit.
Go play golf.
Yeah, go golf. See how long it takes you to be Arnold Palmer. I mean, it's, I don't get that. And I never did. That, guiding all my life, you know, that you see that in, when you're guiding and you see these people that their quest, and I can't even imagine today. I quit guiding for all, other than Mel and you, maybe 10 years ago, pre-cell phone. And I think the cell phones, I have not taken a picture of a, it's kind of strange for a guy who makes his living on this, behind this side of the camera, but I haven't taken a picture of a fish, and I think this is 9 years. I think last year I said eight, and I, as cell phones showed up, and I mean, I was thinking about this on the way up here because I was thinking of my buddy Walt Grau. I don't know why. Well, Walt Grau is just one of the greatest, he's a little like Skinny, you know, Steve Mock, he's a Bearhead guy, just so great at everything they do. But I was thinking about, because a buddy of mine sent me a picture from back east, back in Michigan, a big brown trout he caught. And giant, it was a 30, but he caught it on a puss bag, so it doesn't count. And it was a lake run. But at any rate, and he had a GoPro on, right? And so, but I was thinking about this whole photograph and guiding in the time frame where we had 35 millimeter cameras and no, I mean, maybe you brought, if you're a billionaire, you brought your own camera boat, you had film or something, but I was thinking about Walt Grau because Walt's the only guy I know that took the time to compose a photograph and was like Brian O'Keefe does, you know, when right. But Walt did that, and he'd take these pictures that were just staggering. But we were never fishing so close that we had the opportunity. You get your biggest steelhead of your life, and somebody takes a picture. Well, they're in a hurry to go get one, too. And so they usually screw it up, and you got your freaking head's cut off, or you got this and this end of your fish is missing. They don't give a shit. It's like trying to get a picture with Johnny or something, right? Where he's like, no, no, we'll get the next one. Dude, it's a 28. We'll get another one in a minute. You know, and off they go. And we didn't have that. And I mean, I went through all my photographs up for 30, 40 years. And most of the photographs I've got are either back at the camp or getting ready. But on the river, you know, you're not fishing beside each other.
Right.
And so we didn't take a photograph of every fish that showed up, and you took a special one, maybe, or if you got a giant, you. But so many of ours were at night, those always turn out like shit. There's always spots on the lens and this big flash all over the fish is missing or some shit. And so I can't imagine guiding today with... I mean, I watch it on the river. I mean, we go out every day. You know, you see it. There's the cat trying to take the picture of the 17-inch fish and trying to make it look 24 and shoving that, and out he goes. And I mean, shit, I drop enough fish trying really hard not to, you know. And
they're slippery little buggers.
Oh, geez. I mean, I remember the first bull trout I caught. You know, I was trying to get him out of the net. I'd never seen one. It wasn't big. He's like 23-4 inch fish, and I mean, as bulls go, not big. It's right. A freaking monster. I mean, it was gorgeous. I mean, and totally out of the blue. I didn't, you know, I'm fishing trout, and I get this thing. I couldn't get some bitch out of the net. I'm they're trying to take a. I think we were filming too. I think it was when I had Flyfish TV, and I couldn't pick that son of a bitch up. I finally said, I can't do it, because it was like, shit, oh shit, you know. And so now I see this, everything's about this picture. This picture is more important.
Right? Huh? It's look at me, look at me.
I don't know, maybe I'd have done it too back then. I don't know. I just know that when I quit taking pictures, I started remembering my fish, because I would take a picture of it and I kind of would be more encapsulated in the picture than I was. And for those of you who don't know, watch the Andy Mills podcast with Brian O'Keefe, arguably one of the best photographers in our generation, for sure our generation, as far as outdoor stuff goes. And I fish with Brian enough where he's not this photo crazy guy, you know. He's just, if it's going to get a photograph, or if he needs the photograph for some reason, you set it really well and he takes it and you're done. But there's not this, there's never this shit going on. There's like, make the fish the subject. And it's, I think that we've kind of lost that everything kind of just went just for that picture. And we lost the weight, the love of the weight. I mean, steelhead anglers all get it. They all, steelhead people get it's a small numbers game. And quite frankly, when I hear a big numbers game and I hear somebody talking about it, I think, well, you don't get it.
Right.
And even when they do, even when they know, I mean, you just have a great day. I mean, you're going to pump your fucking chest. You have a 10 fish day fishing real, you know, swinging, and that's hard. And so I think we lost the love of the wait for the bite or the, like, I fishing in Michigan at night so much. I mean, that's how I started my career, really, was night fishing with hexes. And, you know, that night is unbelievable, but most nights are unbelievably shit. I mean, right. There's bugs everywhere. It's too hot, too cold. The wind picked up. Spinners didn't show up. Okay, well, let's just mouse it out, you know, but it doesn't. I was telling Andy, I think in that one podcast, I misquoted. I said 63. It was six. I did 66 nights in a row once, and I missed one night. I don't know why. And then I went 17 more.
I got an idea.
Huh?
Nothing.
And I did 17 more. I mean, consecutive. And I guarantee you that 80% of those are fishless nights. You don't want to, you know, we had this thought process, you don't want to screw up the run. You know, if they're not on, you don't want to push them away like they're going to run and go somewhere else or some shit, right? I mean, and so there was just a lot of, and we'd mouse out, and sometimes I'd walk right to my run that I was going to fish, knowing I have a big fish there, and not leave that thing for a week and just wait it out, right? And what a blast. But I think with the whatever you called it, me movement or the pitcher thing, it kind of lost that total love for the weight of the pull, you know.
You're changing. The reason you go changes, right? You're now going to get a picture of a big fish that you can show other people versus going for the love of the activity itself. I mean, I always talked about this with folks in the shop when they'd come back and I'd say, oh, how was it out there? And they're like, oh, it was terrible. I didn't catch any fish. I go, well, did you have fun? Like, and well, no, yeah. I didn't get a lot of fish. Like, well, there's a lot of ways to have a good day fishing. And how I kind of stumbled upon this is, I remember I had fishing was on fire for a while. And then I got skunked a couple days in a row throwing streamers. And I found myself getting really angry and upset on the river. And then I kind of sat down on the bank and was like, how childish am I? That I'm getting upset out here because I'm not catching fish. And it kind of made me realize, like, I'm not here to catch fish. I'm here because I love this activity.
Right.
And so kind of reset my mind in terms of, changing from catching fish kind of being the end to going fishing is the end. It's not a means to an end. It's just, it's enjoyment of the activity for the sake of
think
going.
If you're for those of you who hunt whitetails, what I grew up in Michigan, and I mean, you don't get to just go kill something every time you go hunting, and you better love nature and hunting and the stalk and the sit or whatever you're going to do, however you're going to, you better just love that. And I think that's what I was trying to get to, is that if the end result is simply a 30, you are going to go a long time. And most likely that person most likely won't ever get one, for the simple fact that after a year or two, they're going to say, this is bullshit.
It's going to flame out.
Yeah. I'll just start something else. And, it's just one of those things where to hunt something or to try to achieve anything, I don't care what it is. You want to be a writer? You think your first essay is going to be there aren't that many Tom McGuanes in the world. So it's put your time in and love the time. I mean, that's what it's about. That was a rant.
It always is. I think something else I was thinking
about. I watched
about.
Too many podcasts after. That's what happened.
Yeah. Something I was thinking of while you were kind of talking about not taking photos and stuff. For there's always people on the internet who are going to say, oh, that's bullshit, whatever.
There's a lot of bullshit out there.
Well, there is. Filming for you is very frfrustrating sometimes because, you don't want to show off a fish unless it's a real one. And when we're in this river, real ones, 18, 19, 20 plus. Mm-hmm. But we're also trying to make a show. So I'm always trying to get up close shots of the fish. And Kelly truly just even a big fish, it's quick. Like, we have it all on tape. It's not, we don't do long holds, right? And I think that
try not to. I mean, I got so much shit for that one day. I think Huge gave me shit about having dry hands. And I always figure when I reach in that net, it gets pretty wet, right? But I took it to heart, too, because I don't, when you are on this side of the camera and you are self-promoting, I guess, whatever you're doing, you want to have good behaviors, in particular to the fish, right? I mean, and we all do anyway. If we weren't filming, the thing would never come out.
Yeah.
I mean, should I shake hands? I mean, I do a lot of barbless, just flick it at them if I can, or just reach down and throw it out of there, right? But you don't do that on TV. You don't have that. You could, I suppose, and you take shit for never picking up a... How many guys write in and say, oh, I'm 10 times better than you, I catch more fish than you ever do. God, you're the best. And so, but it's, I try to do it quick like that, but I also probably shouldn't. I'm not dissing the little fish. I'm just. I was watching. Like I said, I did a rat hole of podcasts in the last four days, just because I got fascinated with a couple people, and I'm not like dismissing it. I'm just trying. I don't. It's just time spent more than anything. It's cute. It's nice.
Yeah.
It's a great fish. You know, you let it go. Don't. You know, the whole trying to make them look bigger to the camera. I don't know. I shouldn't do it. I should take a little bit more time, I suppose. But
I mean, like it is ego fluffing when you push a fish out like that because you want to show people how big it looks. I mean, it's all an appeal to ego. Now, I take photos of fish like that too. I mean, it's fun to have and but I think you kind of hit on something that I noticed as well when you said. You remember your fish better when you don't take a photo.
You have but to.
When I take a photo, you know, I'll look at that photo of that fish and go, man, that's so great. And then all of a sudden, all I can remember is the photo.
Well, that's all you've got. That you're relying on the photo to click your memory.
Right.
Well, what the hell did you do 10 years, 12 years ago? When did those sumbitches come out anyway? I remember when Swanee was one of our buddies. He's doing something with a... micro, he wanted me to invest in this company or some shit. And he said, I said, what are they? Because they're tiny little lenses. They're just tiny. I said, well, what would you do with it? And he goes, I don't know, put it on a phone. I says, who would put a freaking camera in a phone, you dumbass? Oops.
Oops.
I could. Whoops. But you know, it was just back then, and we used to carry cameras, carry those little 110s with us, you know, and I think I had more good pictures with those because they were so shitty, and you had to be, everything showed up, you had to be right here.
Yeah, it had to be in the middle tight.
And so, but it was, I did it, I've told the story before, I've told it on film, I have, about when Jerry Dennis, one of my best friends, Jerry edited a couple of my books, but Jerry Wilson, who we just filmed with, and Jerry Dennis, who I've not got to film with out here, or that was one of the guys I wanted to go home and film with.
Yeah.
Because you know, when we were writing, Bob and I were writing Modern Streamers, a lot of the research was done with those guys, and they're guinea pigs, right? And so I was fishing with Jerry down on the White, and got this 24 and a half, 25 and a half, 27, I don't know, it was a good fish. But the bite comes on like super hot. And now 25, 26 is like, okay, let's get him out of here. We got a bite going and you have to run bites. You don't get those all the time. Nobody gets to catch fish all the time. You know, I always want to put some ego Band-Aid on when I go out and fish, saying we fish Thursday afternoons. We don't get to fish every day, like, you know, if you're going to go out and fish from just do your show, because we're doing it for information and stuff, but you want to have a Band-Aid on your ego saying, well, it's absolutely shit day, and we're not going to catch anything, but we got to make our movie, right, our show. And when you get that bite, when you get that super bite, and let me just break your ego, if you get on one, everybody gets on it. The whole freaking river turns on. And that's when you got to get those bites, right? And we had this bite going, Jerry and I did, Jerry Dennis, who's a phenomenal writer. If you don't know Jerry, look him up. His books are incredible. And I'm in a couple of them, but it's always something really bad. I'm generally drunk at a bar saying something I shouldn't, or I don't know. But anyway, I let this, he goes, I want to take a picture of it. I said, no, it's not that big. But we put it in the hog trough, right? And so we know exactly how big it is. And then I take the picture and I'm like, let's go, yeah. You know, and I showed Johnny the picture and he goes, how big is it? I said, whatever, 25 and a half, I think. And he goes, bullshit, 18 at best, or something like that, right? And I went, man, if Johnny can't see it, and I showed him the hog trough. And He's like, I can't believe it. I said, yeah, I know. I couldn't either. I thought it looked like an 18-inch fish. I thought we had the wrong fish. But we didn't have another fish, so we missed the bite. And so we moved on. But I realized with that, that the picture that at that point became an ego thing for me. I wanted to show my big fish. And the only one I did after that is that big fish from up that's in the water, you know, yeah. And it's hanging half in the water.
Yeah.
That was just because that was an in-your-face to Johnny. But
is that the brown with the yeah. rod laying down next to it?
Yeah, and then it's got the
yeah.
circus peanut yeah. or the peanut envy in its mouth. But I just that was for me. I realized, okay, well, you're bitching about this, but you're doing it. So I quit. And it's hard, you know, like filming, you have to do it, obviously, but I talked to a lot of older anglers, like guys like Flip. I never talked to Flip about this, but guys like that, and they don't have these reels of fish pictures. They quit, right? And they know why they're there, you know.
And they're there to go fishing.
Yeah.
And, there's nothing wrong with taking fish pictures.
Absolutely nothing.
I do it. I mean, everybody I know does it. You get a bit, like, I do fish without a net a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And when I don't fish with a net, I don't take fish pictures. Right? Mm-hmm. Again, when I just unhook it and let it go.
Yeah.
I only take a picture when I think I have a, you know, reasonably responsible method of taking a fish picture where I'm not going to harm the fish. Taking them out of the water to begin with probably isn't that great for them.
They're pretty tough. I think we kit glove them. Just, not that I think we shouldn't, but I don't think they're quite as fragile as people like to think they are. I read this thing one time. It said 4% all handled fish die. If that was the case in this river, if July 7th, if you floated the sumbitch, it'd look like a Macy's Day parade with confetti. Every goddamn fish. The guys are catching 10, 20, 30 fish a boat, and if 4% of every one of them in 100 boats, I mean, think about it.
We'd see fish dead.
You'd see hundreds of dead fish. Yeah. And I watch a lot of people handling those fish. I'm surprised they aren't more dead.
Right.
I mean, boat juggling with brown. I watched a guy 3-4 years ago. And it was not a big fish. It was a 16-inch fish, but maybe it was his biggest one of his life. I don't know. But I watched him drop that in the boat 3 times. And thank God he was in an LP, which there was not really much to hide the fish in, so he kept picking it up and he'd juggle it.
Yeah.
And it was like, man, I don't want to ruin this guy's day and be that guy and go over and say, listen, dumbass, either put it in the, and it was 90 degrees, hot boat, you know, there's a dry hand for you, hit that textured bottom, there goes all your, and, but that is just, everybody has to go through, and that's the thing, people don't get, they all did the same damn thing.
Everybody
does, everybody is, and then they're all of a sudden on this goddamn pedestal up here, like, look at me, I am the greatest. Yeah, well, you dropped enough of those sumbitches, so you learned how not to drop them. And so, but that's, you know, and I'm just saying for the guy who did drop the thing 3 times, he probably got better, you know.
Yeah.
I used to call Bob the fish juggler. Bob Linsman, my first, great guy. What a blast we had. We had so much fun. But it was also the TNA bunker. Here's a story for you. The TNA bunker, because of Bob, I think it was Bob and Steve. No, who was it? Can't remember who was in the boat with us. Scott, I don't remember. But and Bob, he gets a big brown. It's a good one. And I mean, it's mid-20s somewhere in there. And Bob's so casual anyway, right? And he gives it, and I actually have a picture of him like this. And like everybody does that shit now where they let go of the fish.
Yeah.
And I've been seeing the guys on the white where they drop one hand, it looks like they're like this, and they go right back up. But they're like, they must be doing this because they hide that hand, and the fish is like hanging there. And so fish is long, right? But Bob's is like, your face good. So I got one of Billy, my cousin. I'll show it. We'll post it up. It's a perfect. He's on the lake and he's got one that slaps him in the face because he comes around. It's like, and that's how Bob is. And the fish hits the deck, and The TNA bunker, I believe, is the first, the style of stacking heads where, like this, where you stack heads with wool and all, I mean, which everything's this. I think that was the first one ever did that in history. There was no profiled heads back in the day. It was always your thread. And that was the first one that built it up that wasn't deer hair, obviously. And it was broad and high. And the Department of Natural Resources were planning the trophy water of the ensemble. And there was these periods where you just couldn't catch a damn fish. You'd go down, and it's like, son of a bitch. They're putting these little rainbows in. And Bob, there wouldn't be rainbows there if they weren't planting them. And so it's a great brown trout fishery. And Bob juggles this fish, and it pukes up one of those things. Well, there's no wild rainbow. And so all of a sudden we're like, oh, shit, got it. They're planting this thing. Wouldn't tell anybody, right? They're secretly doing it or whatever. And so I did a TNA rainbow, that bunker. And that would not have probably happened had I not...
Without the fish juggling.
Without Bob juggling the fish. And the fish, and he threw it in the water. The thing swam away at 90 miles an hour. And people, everybody wants to say they pontificate. It goes out and dies. Well, if he died, I'd probably see him anyway. I mean, that's a big fish, and he'd float, and I'd see him, or I'd find him dead somewhere on a shoreline. I don't think they do as much as... They sure as hell better not, or there won't be any, because right. I watch...
There's a lot of mishandling going on.
This is the most used river in Montana. This, and we are on it all day, every day, right? You would see a lot of dead
every
fish.
Every once in a while, you see one or two, but it's mm-hmm. not... I mean, you don't see that.
No.
I think, like you said, like we're not saying all this to bash the guy that lays it down in the grass to take a photo. I mean, it's a learning experience. There's better ways to do it. And like, shit, I did it. I remember
love those pictures.
My buddy taking me down to Bend, and we were fishing out of his mom's cabin. I don't know where we were because he blindfolded me, and we left in the dark and came back in the dark.
Probably shouldn't tell people this story.
Still can't. I still can't figure out where we were, and I wish I could, because he got a 24-inch rainbow. I got a 22-inch rainbow. That was my biggest fish ever at the time. And I still have this photo of me holding it, and there's grass all over the fish.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at that now and go, oh, shit, I laid it down in the grass to get it out, and blah, blah, blah. But I learned. So, you know, it's a learning experience. Everybody can get better at it.
I'm always curious when I catch a salmon in Alaska that has claw marks on it, and it's got bit in it. You know, didn't die.
Well, I mean, you catch fish that don't have eyes.
I had one that had the back of his head chopped off, basically, and he's out there just fighting on that red, and we're the only ones there for 2 days, so it had to be, we saw him for 2 days, and we're fishing rainbows behind it, but yeah, they were pretty resilient. But still, all that said, I mean, you look at everybody in the world, I don't think we give us enough credit for trying. You know, and I don't care what you want to talk about. And, you know, bass fishing, and everybody knows how much I like bass fishing and how much I admire the anglers. They're so good. And, I mean, in the old days, not so old, like 70s, maybe even mid-80s, you went to the fish cleaning places where they cleaned their fish. That's where you got to watch them. You know, you come in on the gala event when they come in and the fireworks are going off and shit and everything's in live well and they put the fish back. You know, you took them out, put them in, took them out again, put them in a bag, took them out, did the weigh-in, show the fish, put them back and take them and they put them back in the lake, right? Everybody's trying. But you do have to come down to the fact that it's a freaking blood sport. It is. You have to get to we've done so many things as an angling group, and you can never stop. You've always got to keep thinking like that. I mean, we barbless hooks and, I mean, trying to wet hands and wet nets. People don't talk about, you know. I always think you scoop the fish in the water, that net's pretty damn wet. But I got in the habit of not doing mine, just dipping the net first. But I don't know. I think we don't give ourselves credit as a whole, we look at just the assholes and say, oh, look at that. We were probably that asshole a while back too. And, you know, we are moving forward. And there's so much ethical treatment and thought processes of how we're going to mitigate the bad things that can happen if you can. But all you ever hear about is, you know, and I didn't quit taking pictures because of that. I just quit taking pictures because I couldn't remember them. That fish that I didn't catch 3 years ago, for those, I said earlier, I do more dry fly fishing than I do. I grew up as a dry fly only, basically, and guided that pretty much. And for those who don't know, we'll do a show on it. Maybe we'll do it this summer. In July, I do nothing but dry flies, and I have all these rules. And every week's a different set of rules. That culminates on the last week of the last year was no fly that wasn't tied before 1960, and I use horsehair tippet, which is what all that stuff up there is. That's what this is. In case you're all wondering, these are horsehair tippets. It's like shitty 6X. But, you know, I had a fish that I fished for 17 straight nights and never got it. And I got it to eat. I only get three, I can't make three mistakes. Or if I get a fish, I'm out. I get three fish a night. And I can't, if I line it, I'm out. I'm out, you know, just too bad for you. And I had a giant fish going. And I, truly the biggest dry fly fish I've ever seen on the river, personally. It was, you know, 26-7 range. And it ate 17 nights out of 30 for me. And I hooked it so many, I don't remember. I think I hooked it 9 times. And I'd get, oh, and be gone. And it's just gone, right? And I did set, hook, get it, this, gone. And I would like, and then I'm out. And one time it came back and started feeding again. I remember every single night of that. I remember every rise. I remember when it went from feeding left to right, which they hardly ever stop. You know, they get in a rhythm, and I lined it, and I had to go home. And I remember every freaking, if we filmed that, I wouldn't remember shit about it. I can't tell you how many times I watch these videos, and I'm like, oh, I forgot we were there. But that, I'll never forget. I don't have a picture, and I bowed out on the fish. And that last night, when it was my last night, and she's just feeding away. But I think that was horsehair tippet night. I don't know. And I went, no, it wasn't, because it was before that. But I just said, you know what? That's been the funnest game ever. You win. And I walked away. It would have been my biggest. But I had this ethical thing. We were talking about wet hands and shit like that, but juggling fish. But I had this thing in my brain that I was going to hook her, and they all do. They turn. We caught a fish there that one day when we filmed it. That turned, and I knew she'd go downstream. And I truly was curious. It was a big hand. I tell you, I could paint that fish right now for you, and it'd be done. I had this feeling in my mind that fish would die from me fighting it, because I was running 4X, but it's so fast below me. And I thought, I'm going to not want to lose this fish, and I am going to race that. I'm going to chase her 100 yards downstream, and she's going to tip over dead on me, and I'm going to want to, you know, shove a hot coal poker in my eye. And so I bowed out and said, hell with it. And the very next year, that's the biggest fish in 21 years I'd ever seen here. And the very next year, I went up and I found a buck bigger. And I didn't get him either. I just sucked. I hooked him a lot. Damn it.
So I noticed that summer, and I know you've done it since, but I remember that first summer you were talking about fishing with rules. Mm-hmm. People always found that really interesting in the shop. When you were kind of telling it.
I think they found it really stupid.
A little bit of both. Maybe that's why they were so interested, is they're, you know, kind of looking at the animal in the cage. But will you just tell us a little bit about kind of why you fish with rules, start off with what your rules are, and then kind of why you went down that path.
Well, the the rules change every, there's 4 weeks, and every week it's different. And I,
this is the month of July, correct?
Correct. Yeah. And I did it kind of as, it was multiple things, really. It started out a little bit as a challenge, and a little bit, I felt myself, you know, when you're in the shop all day and you're talking to people and they get, you know, killed it that night or that afternoon or whatever. And I felt like I had to catch more fish. And I thought, well, that's probably the dumbest thing ever to go and do. And it's kind of an ego thing. You go out and, you know, this river has such a high concentration of fish and it's so healthy, so great. And, you know, you go out and if you know where to go, you might have a pod of fish 20 deep in there. And if you're worth a shit, you're going to get at least half of them, or at least hook them, right? And so that started to irritate me that I was going for numbers. It's not a big fish hunt, so you're going for numbers. And it really, it started to irritate me. And it started 4 or 5 years ago, really. And so that's when I started with the, just with me. And so the very first rule was that I had to pick a fly and leave with it. Done. And I couldn't fish the same fly twice in a row for the week. So I, you know, and then to make it weird, I'd like, I know there's going to be this spectacular Epioris spinner fall, you know, and the caddis are going to be, so I took an ant. And caught a lot of fish. I mean, it was like, okay, well, not a lot, I mean, by stupid numbers, but it was a good night. And thought, well, that was fun. And so it just kind of gravitated. It kept going, picking up momentum, rolling down the rock down the hill. And the more challenging I made it, the more I enjoyed it. And the more I went and, like, one night was politically motivated, I would only fish to fish that rose to the right. And so I got down to the beach and all the fish are feeding to the left. They're all feeding because of that, you know, coming off that wash. Mm-hmm. And so they're all over here. They're all turning. And if you don't know what that means, it means you're not paying enough to, you should identify your fish's feed. There's so many great, In the Ring of the Rise is when I was a child, was such a great book. And that's where I first learned about the fish tilting his head one way or the other and, you know, trying to set your fly so it would sit there. And so I had to leave. And I had to leave a shit ton of fish up. And there were two particularly big browns that were feeding in a wash where the wave would come this way. And you'd see them turn and their heads would come up and eat this fly and their body would kind of roll on them like that. They're on the, basically they're that far from shore. Oh, that was tough. I thought about if I go upstream, they'll be pinned to the right. And so I did. I went downstream, just took a walk and just, but, you know, it became so fun and nobody would, you know, who would know? Who would know your rule? Who would know if you cheated? Just like with that giant hen. Dude, when she, I just had to say, no, I can't do this. I mean, she gets her three shots and done. Right. And the rules were more of a, they're partly a challenge, but they're also partly just to go and witness it as, you know, you're just a spectator, see the, and that will just be fun. And then the more I did it, and that's where the horsehair came from, I was reading Dame's Julianne Berner's book about, which there's a thing in there that's my favorite part in the whole book. Well, it was like the 16th century or some shit. It was way back there. It was the first book on fly fishing, really. It's a gal who is, it's an incredible, it's a short read. You should read it. But
why do you say that?
Just because it's interesting to see back.
Why do you say specifically that it's short?
Huh? Well, it's not a very big book.
Oh, so I mean, I might be able to get through it.
Yeah, you might. But there's this. My favorite part is, and I can't quote it verbatim, but it's something of the effect of, while going about your sport, be sure not to harm another man's hedges, and always close your gates. Which meant in the 16th century there were assholes then too. And I had this warm feeling that, oh, it's not just today. There's always been people who were just so damn self-centered that they would wreck somebody else's shit and leave the gate open for their cows to leave. And so, but she was talking about her favorite tippet and being a white square horsehair. Well, I have a lot of horses and I have every color, right? And so that's why, so I go get Choco Tail and Bella Tail, and I got Osa Tail, and I got Bow Tail, but Choco's was the closest to what, well, actually, Osa, the Fjord Mel's horse is. And so, but none of it felt square. And then I had this kid come in, I can't remember his name, he's really smart, and I knew he's very well read, way ahead of his years, he's probably not even 25. And I was telling him, I said, you've read names. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. He knew everything in it, right? I'm like, wow. And so I go, and because he saw me with all the horsehair out. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to, and I grew up with catgut still, which is silk, right? And when I was a kid, people don't realize that monofilament hasn't been here that long. I mean, that's a 60s thing, you know, when it starts happening. And late 50s, I think, somewhere in there, but probably not right in there, in the early time. And so I grew up, you know, as a child, I didn't get to fish that much with the fly because these people didn't let their kids do that. You had a bait caster. But anyway, there was this stuff, and I'm looking for it to feel it squared. And this kid goes, well, Kelly, I think it means more like in that time frame, it would be more like square, not square as in we. And I'm like, oh, damn, it sucks being the dumb kid. Because it made my life so much easier to go through the hair and find, you know, I'm trying to learn how to stretch it and do things to see what its strength is. But I had more fun. That's what struck me. I was earlier in the first one we shot a little while ago. I was talking about watching Flip Pallett's podcast because I'm just fascinated by Flip, always have been. He's just such a pioneer. But he's talking about taking rubber rafts and going out into the ocean, pulling rubber rafts when they're kids, right? And he's just always, he likes to make stuff, right? He likes to do things, actually participate in everything he's doing. And that was kind of what that hair was. It was like, well, you know, it's not going to be as good as monofilament, obviously, right? And you know, it's going to be a pain in the ass. I had to figure out how to knot it, because right. Your knots don't work. Nothing worked. I'm like, well, that one doesn't work. Well, hey, that one almost worked, you know? I actually got 3 fish in one night on one tippet. It was all my fish. And that was one of the nights that giant showed up, the male. And I'm like, oh, God. And he's up just going, boom! This is a freaking monster, man. He's just mowing this thing. And I'm like, no, not tonight. And I'm thinking, just cut the son of a bitch off. Just cut it off. And I couldn't. And I never saw him again.
You'd only be cheating yourself.
Yeah, but I'd have got this. Okay. I'd already hooked him twice. And he'd hit that. He's on a really fast, that inside slow. And then he's got that huge white water. And he just goes, hoo-choo! Just, you know. There's no, and you can't run him because you're out in that water and there's nowhere to go. I'm like, shit. But I did get 3. I didn't get a fish over 16 inches, but I got 3 on the horsehair.
That's pretty
cool. That was pretty freaking
cool. Pretty cool.
And all on a Red Fox traditional. Where's that fly? It's up there somewhere.
Did we tie one for the channel?
Yeah, we should tie it. It's one of my favorite flies. What happened to it? Yeah, it's like this, but not that one. It's like that with a we'll take a picture of it. It is that.
Might
be that.
I think we tied that for the channel.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
I think it might be that fly, actually, that I got him on. Because everything was, you know, growing up during the selective trout era, everything became so exacting. And it's funny because during that era, not that selective trout era, but during that time I was doing the 2 or 3 years ago, in the second or third year of the rules, Brian O'Keefe calls me. And he said, I don't know if he asked me what the rules were that week or what I was doing or what are you doing? And I said, well, you know, it's rules week. I'm doing this. And he goes, shitting me. He goes, I've been on the South Fork fishing a traditional white Cahill, and I am absolutely annihilating it. And he says, it's kind of his thing was just like, oh, there it was. Oh, I haven't fished one of these in 20 years, right? And I'm thinking, and so mine, that 1 year, everything, the whole month was pre-1960. That was last year. Everything was 1960s, traditional hackles, no spinners, nothing like that. Man, they ate the hell out of it. I mean, just as good as anything else. And Brian's theory was, well, they haven't seen, my theories were a little deeper, kind of like we went so exacting, but you know, you let light refractions and, you know, LaFontaine's got a couple books about that when there's water moving around, the fish, there's a lot of refractive of the bottom and the fish has seen a lot of stuff, not just the total silhouette of that thing laying down. But, well, maybe that's it, you know, maybe it's just like, and it's got gold tinsel, and it's evening. Shit, I would never put gold tinsel on something in the evening. I mean, what the hell is that, right? What's refracting light? And when it's no light, hardly, and they ate the shit out of it, so. But it was just fun. The whole rules thing were just, it was a challenge, it was fun, and it was to make it, there's no way, when you only get 3 fish, you can't make it numbers night. Because then I got to walk back in the shop and say, how'd you do last night? I got 3. I got 9. You won.
Good for you.
Good for you. Yeah, you win. I got 3. And I remember, I think it was John Bowman I said that to, or somebody there. He was so disappointed. I said, I got 3 and I didn't get 1 over 16. And it was a 3 on the horsehair. That was a freaking world record to me.
Yes,
I was like, holy shit, that's the best night I've had in years.
I can't remember if it was that night or one of the other nights, but I remember you coming back and you're just beaming in the shop the next morning.
Probably was that night.
And you go, you know, not every night is it good to be Kelly. Last night, it was good to be Kelly.
Yes, last night was good. Yeah.
So I think we kind of beat around the barn a little bit with this, but, you know, you made the comment that if you're not seeing which way your fish is rising, you're not paying close enough attention. So I think we should talk a little bit about what are the best things, you know, a beginner, intermediate, or even, you know, pretty darn good anglers can do to improve their dry fly fishing before they actually start casting.
Have fished with Dave Ellis once in your life.
Okay, so for those
of you who have not had your hat handed to you and your ego smashed like that every time you fish with him, oh God, he's so good. And okay, before you cast, I mean, it's hard when you're fresh, man. It is hard not to just race out there. I watched. And he doesn't even know I did it. I watched Renee Harrop one time. Renee, I'm not, you know, I know Renee. I should know him better. I wish I'd made more effort to know him better. But I got to watch him stalk a fish on the ranch one time. And it was a day fish, too. And it was amazing because he just stood there looking at it. He's crouched down, not really crouched, just kind of sitting in the weeds. On the shore, you know, the grass, and he just watched it, and I was like, in a long time, I mean, not an hour or something like that, but like 3-4 minutes, and he just sat there, and he stalked it. And Renee's a big hunter, you know, and he's great at everything he does, and great painter, great everything. But it was the stealth that he presented. And it was a little bit like with Dave Ellis, who's the greatest dry fly angler I've ever known. I mean, I've never seen anything like him. But they pay attention to their fish. And that's when you're young, it's hard to not just say, oh, screw it and throw. And it's one of the things I'm always bitching about distance casting. And when I say it, it's not to do with like steelhead or something like that. It has to do with instead of stalking the fish. I mean, that was where the original mantra of don't hope your fly, hunt your fly. Originally, it was stalk more, cast less. Because you walk out on the Madison with all this turbulence and this shit, everything's going like this. And if you're lucky, you got a pool that's 3-4 foot long that's not racing. But at the end of that, it's going to be faster, which is going to immediately grab your leader. It's going to grab your fly line. It's going to tighten it up, straighten it out, right about the time you need the thing to be nice and loose. And your fly's, floating the way it's supposed to. And so it's better to stock up and be in control of your line. And so for new anglers, I think we're at a disadvantage today. When I was a kid, the rods weren't that good, and you weren't going to cast that far, right? You were going to get closer. And so we had an advantage in that respect that you had to stalk a little bit closer. Now you see people, they'll be like throwing 35, 40 feet. I don't know how you'd ever, you get lucky once in a while, but there's no control of your line.
It's a lot easier to be accurate from 15 feet.
Yeah. Well, and you got to have control of your leader. That's, yeah. I think as a whole, notwithstanding certain zones, like if you grew up on the Henry's Fork, I'm preaching to the choir, they get drift. If you grew up in the Spring Creeks, you get the fact that your leader, Gary LaFontaine in one of his books, I think it's Dry Fly Code, I can't remember which one, he said that he hated, and this was in the 70s, when HMG came out, the first graphite. It was soft as shit. It was unbelievable. By today's standards, people pick one of those up and go, what's this thing, right?
Glass.
Yeah. And he said that, he says it's ruining, and he was guiding a lot, on the Big Hole and different areas around Missoula too, he said it's making straight line casters. They have no control of their leader. And when whenever we go out and test a rod, you notice that I test the rod at 25, 30 feet, usually 25, because rod extension's another 6, and then you get a 10-foot leader, right? And so now you go out and you test a rod and you cast it 40 feet of fly line, I just don't ever see that being a viable fishing thing.
It's really hard to put it on a dinner plate.
Yeah.
At 20 feet, let alone 45.
All you got to do is go to I don't know if they still have the Best of the West, but go to a casting tournament and see how often pros miss the 30-foot hula hoop.
Yeah. I mean, put a Frisbee out in your yard and pace off 20, 25 feet. Try to put it on top of it.
And that's a long cast. That's the width of this room. Right. This is a giant room. And now you got to see the head coming up. Is the fish going like this and feeding to the right? You're back here on his right side looking upstream, and the fish is going like this. Now, if you throw to the ring, your line goes right over your fish. So how do you hook a cast? I mean, the superstars, hooking a cast, you don't get to hook 30 feet of it. You only get to hook this much.
Right.
So you got to go, whoop, and it's got to sit here like this. So if it sits here, everything goes over your fish. So stalk more, cast less, and then get a real feel for where your fish is. See him which way he's going. Is he going this way? It's hard, but it's part of the stalk. It's part of the whole learning the fish, and that's what the rule thing came down to, is like, I want to go back to the time when Dave Ellis was kicking my ass every time we'd go fishing because I was trying to show him how far I could cast. And then he would read his fish and he would catch that it's going this way. And so that was most of it.
So I think something super valuable too, we're talking about beginners trying to get better at dry fly fishing, seeing their fish, seeing where their fish is feeding, you got to be close to present to it. But I think even at a higher level, like get to the water and just stand there for a while. And it's so hard to do, like you said, when you're green around the ears. Because for a long time when I was dry fly fishing, I would just get in there and start throwing casts. And inevitably, I'd put fish down that I'm sure were feeding, but I didn't wait long enough to see them. So if you just get there and, you know, use the power of observation, 2 minutes, all of a sudden you'll start seeing fish everywhere. If there's a hatch, or if not, you know, you can see them rolling down low, you'll see them flashing. Then all of a sudden you have a better idea of how to get them.
I think you could take that out too. I agree with you 100%. I've said it in every seminar I've ever done, that the reason there, we talked about the superstar guides and why guides are what they are, is it's their completely their ability. It's not that they know a better fly sometimes, not very often. I mean, especially like think saltwater. Andy told me he's fished the same three flies for 25 years. He was just dumbfounded at the number of flies that we have. But they know they can read the water. And they read the water so perfectly. In the salt, it's your tide and it's your grasses and whatever. But in the river, the thing that I think most anglers, and why I felt most anglers needed me, is their inability to read water. And they see water as all water. And, you know, it's not. It's not all water. It's all flowing down the river, but it's not fish holding water. And the great guides and the great anglers can identify that. And that only comes from racing out, putting your fish down, and going, shit, how many times am I going to do that before I stop, right? And you start reading the water and reading it and seeing where the fish holds. And then observation of your line, your leader, and your fly. It's not just your fly, because, I mean, on this river, the hardest thing, period, is the fact that if you get a 4 or 5 foot long run, it's usually nice, glassy, and maybe, you know, you got your fast water here and your bank here, whatever, and then it's going to come together and it's going to come through and it's going to have a fast shoot right behind it. So what I was saying, we lost our audio there for a second, but I was saying that it's, you know, when you see the water that's slick, and then it's going to speed up behind it, and if you plop your line down and it's straight, the fly line will immediately get sucked down, right? And if your leader lays straight, which when you see people that are just so over-delivering their flies and on a dry fly, you basically have zero chance that fly is going to get a dead drift, right? Conversely, if you're above your fish and you do it, it's almost no effect whatsoever. But I still like to see people stop their rod, get a little kick in their leader and drop and get some freedom in their leader so that their fly can just float before it tightens up. And it's going to tighten up. I don't care who you are. But reading the water is so, so huge, and it's nothing. That's the beauty of life right there. You can read all you want, but you have to go out and see water. You have no 10 foot of any water. It changes every minute. And so you have to go out and experience it. So I would say that for people who are starting in particular, is if you just observe, just be an old guy for a minute, just stand there. And it's really hard to do. I was psycho, you know, when I started too. I would blow through one and just run upstream further, right? Just, I'll find a dumb one. I don't give a shit. I'm just going to cover water. And so, you know, and there's no way to tell somebody just slow down. I mean, you can say slow down, read it. Especially like here, and here's a great example. Here at night, when we're fishing the dry flies at night. So we go out at 8 o'clock, or whatever, it's dark, like 10 o'clock maybe. So you got 2 hours, and there's another thing. The water will be different at 9:15 than it is at 8:15. Light's different, and bugs aren't there yet, or they're here, and they're just different bug, whatever it is. But then all of a sudden, the fish slide over when they want to get on the couch and eat slower, because all fish want to do that. They don't want to eat in that fast water. And you can do it every day. You can walk down here, go down to $3 bridge, whatever, and watch people sploshing through the water, going up to this thing. And then you'll see one person just sitting there looking. And if you're careful, you will see dorsal fins doing this. In the, they'll be so close to the edge, they'll be this far from shore, they'll be in this much water, they're this big, so their dorsal fins going like this. And you'll see them getting pushed by the waves and just going, right?
You can't hear it. No. It's so hard to see.
If you're lucky, you see that dorsal fin go like that once it's totally out of the water. Well, that's a real doable fish if you don't step on the son of a bitch. And when you're casting 30 feet, like so everybody can see you casting, you're not really fishing. You're just, you know, people catch fish. Dumb luck's always out there. But then you go with someone who just slows down and gets it. That's just so hard to do.
It's really hard to do until you see it happen and believe that it works. I mean,
and that's part of the rules part. When you only get three fish, you're looking for that fish.
Right.
And even as much as I fished, I mean, it still amazes me when I'll be sitting and all of a sudden I see it. And it's like, wow. It's like a deer, a coyote in the woods. You're looking right at it. You got no freaking idea.
Isn't it incredible?
They're looking at you eyeball to eyeball. And you're just like, but that would be for me. And I would really encourage people to learn to hook, to throw a kick in their leader.
Yeah.
Just to, you know, just stop it. Or you can curve cast it, whatever it is. But be able to do that. And don't worry about being able to do it more than 25 feet from you. I mean, learn to fish where you belong.
It all happens in close.
Yeah.
I think another good tip that I heard, which is hard to do on certain rivers that don't like really horseshoe, like the Madison is fairly straight throughout. Mm-hmm. You do get some different angles, but if you can find glare on the water, especially at night, when it's the light's going down, if you can look into the glare, then you get great contrast because those fish's heads will be black in the dark. So sometimes, you know, if you can position yourself, you know, where you're directly looking into glare and you think, well, I can't see anything. Well, you'll see the thing you're looking for.
See the head.
Yep. And then, you know, it's all about one of the other tips I use, you know, I see that fish and I try to draw a line with where I think I saw it to the bank. Because if you're looking at the water, you know, that water's moving down.
Oh, you mean to position yourself.
To know where that fish is. Because a lot of time, if you see that rise, mm-hmm. your eyes will automatically follow the water a little bit, and then all of a sudden they're below where that fish is. Yeah. So you're going to land your fly right on top of it. So if you can, you know, draw a line to a bank, to a rock, to something that's consistent, say, that's where I think my fish is, and then, you know, if you get to see the fish four or five times, it helps a lot.
Yeah.
And then, you know, put yourself into position, and then you can make your cast. And I think that's something that's hard for new anglers to do because they're kind of the mindset that the more casts you make, the more chances you have to catch fish. Now in streamer fishing, I would say that's true. There's still, you know, rules that come with that. With dry fly fishing, really good anglers, oftentimes they only need one cast to catch a fish.
Well, I mean, you often don't have more than one because if you screw it up, you put it down.
Exactly.
Go down to the Henry's Fork and throw me five casts at a fish and see how often they stay up. I mean, the Madison's an anomaly. I mean, it's so broken water, and the fish are on a treadmill. They've got to feed, and it's so prolific. The hatches are so intense. You can break some rules here, but if you find the slicks where there's pods of fish, they still do the same thing. They say no, you know. You might not blow them out like you would on a, you know, like a spring creek like the Henry's Fork, but you definitely put them down.
And you know, I've had it before too, where they stay up. They just know you're there.
They're just hip to your ass.
They know what's happening.
Oh yeah.
Remember, there's one fish.
That's worse.
Fishing with my buddy Jack last year on the EPR spinner fall, and this fish was right up at the head of the bucket. You know, there's probably 20, 25 fish up in there. We picked off a few from the back of the pod, and you know, this fish was sitting behind a rock and there's pretty fast water coming along either side. It's just an absolute nightmare fish for a dry fly angler. Fast water, it's right up at the head. It's almost impossible to get adrift. You're trying to get him, tease him into the big water to eat it, because otherwise it gets dragged right past him. And we must have thrown casts at this thing for, I don't know, an hour. A lot of casts at him. He just kept eating. Mm-hmm. He was dodging our fly to eat. And I know we had the right fly on. I mean, they'd been on fire the whole week. It was impossible to get a good drift in there, and he knew it. And, you know, his head looked like it was about 4 inches wide.
They always do.
Yeah, it keeps me up at night. Well, that might be a good place to wrap up our third episode, unless you have anything else you want to throw in.
Not really.
Well,
just keeps it, you know. This whole, we'll try to post that somewhere this year on the rules. I always tell anglers and fly tiers, practice your craft. We don't practice fishing and we don't practice fly tying. We tie a fly, we get to the front, the part that pisses us off every time, and then we hack through it, but we don't ever just go to the front and tie it. And we don't practice fishing. People really don't go out and practice fishing. And it's hard to do because you want to go catch a fish. But if you've got to run, there was one on the Boardman River that Jerry Dennis and I used to fish this section of the river quite a bit. And he would go down and I would go up and blah, blah, blah. And I had a spot that just kicked my ass every night. I just couldn't. I'm going upstream. It's looker's right, but river left. So I'm fishing to the right side. And there's a chute that always had one fish in, and it was a big one. I did get him finally. But I went back in the middle of the day one day and just said, I got to go back and figure out how to put a cast to this fish. And so, but I had on I didn't get it during the day. I knew that fish was going to be there. And I just had to learn somehow to get a cast that I had to do an upstream reach, but that wasn't enough. And then you can't always go from the same positions, right? I mean, everyone wants to fish upstream. And I learned so much. This fish was not some giant fish. This is a 16-inch fish, brown trout, which is a big fish back home. I mean, I think it is anywhere. People just forgot how great a 16-inch fish is. It's a great fish. But it had kicked my ass for a week. And I would tell Jerry, did you get him? No. No, put him down. And put him down like instantly, right? And so I just figured out a new... And so if you have an opportunity to practice without fishing, because when you fish, you just get so locked in on catching that fish but if you can go to water and just, I try to get streamer guys to learn to do a jerk strip. I said, just cut the hook off the fly and fish it for 10 minutes and learn to move the fly. And just the opposite with the dry fly. Just go out and learn to drift the dry fly.
Right.
Why is it getting sucked sideways? Why is it right at the last minute? Well, your position's wrong, obviously. Your cast is too long or your position's wrong. One of them's wrong. And if you go practice it, you would... And usually the fish move into different feeding zones anyway. So if you go in the middle of the day, they're probably not where they are at night anyway, or in the evening when the flies are on. And so, I don't know. That would be, I would say, just we all practice casting. We practice casting until we can. We all go to the driving range and hit the frickin' ball as far as we can. But we don't go, you know, we just don't go and practice our short game.
Exactly. Yeah, I was going to say, practicing your drift is like practicing putting.
Yeah.
I mean, shit, I might have played college golf if I'd ever done that.
I wouldn't have.
That's why I don't catch fish.
That's a wrap.
Yeah. All right, well, let's wrap it up. I wanted to end it with one more comment from a serial negative guy. He loves watching our stuff, apparently. Has something negative to say to us every time.
Perfect. I love it.
Said, I made it 10 and a half minutes. Yawn. I'm a glutton for good fishing-related videos, but this sure as hell ain't it. Call your podcast The Ego and His Minion. That one made me chuckle. I enjoyed
Maybe
that.
That's the name.
Yeah. Yeah. It could be.
Minion.
Yeah, well,
it's
you know.
Derogatory.
For those folks, I hope the rest of you sane individuals realize that we're trying to put out something that folks enjoy, and hopefully it helps them out. I mean, that's your line, right?
Yeah.
Hope you liked it. Hope it helps you out.
Oh, there was one that said that. Hope it helps you out. There was one of those comments. Hope you. I like that. Mel and I were laughing our ass off. Hope that helps you out. And, you know, as a whole, that's how you have to take this stuff, because we're not making some boatload of money. When April Volkey did my podcast, that 8-hour deal, and she, I thought I was going to die when it was over, because she says, so what do you want to be known for? I said, what, am I dying? What do you mean? What do I want to be known for? And I said, as a teacher, I mean, while we're doing these things, and for that matter, almost everybody out there doing these, they're just doing it to help people. Yeah. I mean, there's not enough money in it to make it worth your time to sit here. And so, but it's fun. And I meant it when I said that. That's why I liked guiding. I loved teaching people how to do stuff. And maybe it's not for everybody. And so that's why there's lots of channels. So if you made it 10 minutes, I hope you found a new one that's better. And hallelujah. Because this, nobody's getting rich, and nobody's, we don't see anybody. We don't see it. We just do these things and hope they help. And that's why we finish everyone with, I hope that helped you out. Thank you.